This week on the Commander Clash podcast, we're talking about the best cards from Secrets of Strixhaven. Welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we're talking about the best cards from Magic's newest set, Secrets of Strixhaven. And joining me for this, we got the small crew today. Phil couldn't be here, but we got Krim and we got Tomer. How's it going, guys?
Hello.
I'm very excited.
Oh,
this I guess we're going back to school.
This set's so cool. I'm very excited too, because I actually I've always been a little mid on Strixhaven, but this version of Strixhaven, same, for some reason, is really doing it for me. I really, really like the second version of Strixhaven. And we have some really exciting cards to talk about today. So the way we're going to do this, a little bit different. When we have done in the past, the best card from a set podcast, we've kind of made our own lists and kind of mashed them together and had some of our favorite cards and some of the best cards. But our focus today is we're trying to get to the actual best cards from the set. So we're really looking at three groups of cards. So the three groups we're going to go through, number one is what I would say are true staples. These are cards, your Arcane Signets and Shocklands, cards that just go in basically any deck in their colors. Then the next group is going to be cards that are a little bit below that. I'd still call them staples, but maybe they go in a few different archetypes and not every archetype. And the last group of cards are cards that are really, really, really good in one popular archetype. So a great card for Spellslinger or a great card for whatever, +1/+1 counters. So that's how we're going to do this today. We're going to go through Secrets of Strixhaven, put cards into those buckets. But before we do, we got a couple of sponsors. Our show today is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Today's show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more, and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So we recently had a podcast about things that ruin Commander Night. And our top comment comes from @comadrine257, says, the time equity discussion taking up half the video is peak irony.
Yes,
which is
behind the
true.
Scenes, that was the main topic of the thing. And then we're like, well, do we have enough time in the podcast to cover time equity? Let's throw in some extra stuff and make it more general. That's why it took up so much time. That was the main idea.
That is true. It was basically the time equity podcast, but we weren't sure if we could actually do an hour on time equity. So we decided to add in some other things. So time equity was the big topic for that one. Just not enough time for the time equity. Anyway, let's move on to today's topic, which is the best cards from Secrets of Strixhaven. So as I mentioned a minute ago, we're going to put these cards into three buckets. And then if we have time at the end, then maybe we'll talk about a couple of our pet cards or something like that. But the first bucket we're putting cards into is true staples. So when I think of true staples, I'm thinking Swords to Plowshares. I'm thinking Arcane Signets, Shocklands. These cards that literally, if you're in the colors, you need a very good reason not to play those cards. The default is if you're in the colors, you're probably going to play those cards. So I'm curious, Krim and Tomer, what do you guys think are true staples from this set? Are there any cards from this set you think rise to that level of kind of almost being auto-includes in their colors?
There's a few, right? I think right out the gates, should we just talk about the new lands?
That's the biggest one, yeah.
I think that's the closest to a staple for me. I'm I don't know if I have a hot take or something, but I don't basically, I consider nothing a staple in Commander except for maybe Sol Ring, I guess, which I don't run. I always think I try to build towards synergy and themes, so I don't usually go for staples. But I think this new cycle of lands is the closest to it for here.
And what lands do you guys think about it? A freebie synergy wise, Tomer, right? Uh-huh. Because you got to play lands anyway, so you don't have to worry as much about, oh, is it breaking theme to play this card?
Mm-hmm.
So these new lands, if in case you have not seen them, it's the Turbulent Cycle. They are lands that add two colors. They have the land type. So Turbulent Moor, for example, is a plains and a swamp. It makes white and black, and then it enters tapped unless your opponent, so all of your opponents put together, control eight or more lands. So once your opponents have a total of eight or more lands, it comes into play untapped, which should mean by turn three for sure. Halfway through the second turn cycle, if people are ramping with green early in the game, maybe even mm-hmm. earlier in the second turn cycle, I think these are the best lands that have ever been made for Commander. I think when you think about cycles that did not go through standard, like shock lands and fetch lands, I think the current best cycle is the Battle Bond lands, right? Those are very mm-hmm. good, but they don't have the land types. I actually think these are better than the Battle Bond lands, especially if you build decks like I do with a lot of fetch lands. Like if you're not playing fetches, you're not playing Farseeks, you're not playing Nature's Lore, and you don't care about the land type, verges or whatever, then they don't really matter, right? Like, they don't matter as much. But if you're playing the stuff that cares about the land types, I think this ranks just below the fetch land shock land tier for lands that I will play in Commander. I think it's the next best cycle behind those two as far as land types. But what do you guys think? I think these lands are kind of insane.
I think a lot of people initially kind of misread this at first.
Yes.
It's like, so an opponent needs to control eight or more lands or something like that. It's like, no. This is your opponents, everybody all together need to control eight. And I think that alone means it's going to be usually untapped, like you had mentioned. And the land typing is really, it's plain, it's simple, it's very short and straight to the point. The land types. I love that mm-hmm. the land types are here. That's everything. And most of the times, this will be untapped.
I don't know if it's better or worse. I think it's worse than the Battle Bond lands just because I really like untapped lands. And I like the Battle Bond lands are going to be untapped on turn one and two. And then this one is like 3.5, turn 3.5. It depends where you are in seat position or if there's green. That's still pretty early. So there's slow duels. And there's so much synergy potential, as we were talking about. Like with fetch lands, obviously, I think the green ones are especially good just because if you're playing like three visits for Nature's Lore and stuff, if you're fetching out forests, that's pretty impactful. Those are two of the most played cards in the format in green. And then also for white, I think the plains duels are also very good. If you're running like Knight of the White Orchid and the white catch-up ramp packages, it becomes especially good. So I do think these are like just under Shocklands for me in terms of like duels. Now, I think that I like them more than Surveil. Would you guys run it over Surveil or rank it over Surveil?
That's so tough.
That's another duel.
I like that Surveil.
I remember when we were playing our pre-modern Commander game or Old Border, whatever we called it, and I was playing original dual lands, literally the best dual lands ever made in Magic, and I was fiending for a Surveil land. Like I was fetching up my underground scene and being like, man, I really wish this was Undercity Sewers right now. So
yeah.
I think that like maybe I overrate the Surveil lands. I think in most cases, I will just play both of them. I think these are mm-hmm. so good that I'm going to play them in pretty much every deck. I think maybe my five color decks, if I think about the mana bases, it's usually 10 fetch lands, 10 shock lands, and then like five each of like Surveils and then the Triomes. And then you have a few slots for basics and utility lands. So I'm not sure there's going to be enough room for these in five color, even though I think they're still good. But I think anything short of that, I would play these basically every two color to four color deck.
Yeah. I mean, like right now, the biggest downside about this is that I think we have to hopefully, actually, I hope we don't have to wait too long for this cycle to complete, right? Because I mean, Superheroes is the next set. So then that would mean that ideally, the other half comes through there. I don't want to wait a million years for the other half of this.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
I'm guessing Reality Fracture. That's my guess.
Ooh,
I would be surprised if they did it.
The
Turbulent kind of
Turbulence.
Like,
yeah.
Wouldn't that be Star Trek then? Because then you could also have Turbulence in the space.
That's
right?
True.
Like, I don't care. I don't want to wait.
Okay. I think the name also has to be more like Evergreen too, though. That's the problem. Is if it's like tied to like Marvel or tied to Star Trek, then you can't really name it something like a Turbulent Supernova or something like that. I don't know.
Because yeah, how will they supernova reprint it? Could work, right? As long as it's just like turbulent Enterprise, right? Then that's
sure,
different.
Yeah,
but
that would suck.
Reality Fracture doesn't seem strike me as a set that would have commander decks.
So, yeah.
I feel like it'd be weird to have a cycle that was like half in universe and half universes beyond. Yeah. We haven't had that
sure,
yet.
Sure.
But maybe we've reached the point where like it's gonna happen sooner or later, I'm sure. One other thing I want to mention.
Oh, go ahead. No,
one
go
other thing
ahead,
I want to mention about these that I think is notable is we have spent a lot of years complaining about how bad mana bases are in precons and asking for wizards to put better lands in precons. And I was always thinking, oh, they could just reprint good lands in precons, right? Throw some shocks in there, throw some surveils in there. But they don't seem to want to do that because it ruins a reprint equity for standard or modern or whatever. But I think this is actually like a reasonable, like this improves the mana bases of precons significantly. Like if they are just going to put these lands in every precon for the rest of time, I think that's actually like a very good thing for precons. Do you think they will do that, Tomer and Krim? Because one thing I'm worried about is they dump these in these commander precons and then finish the cycle in a future set. And then we don't see them for like 3 or 4 years. And if they do that, these lands are going to be way more expensive than fetches or not fetches, but shocks or surveils, I think. Like, do I need to worry about that?
I don't yes. see a world where we don't just get this every commander precon.
That's why we should
see a world. We could have said that about the Battle Bond lands, but then we decided, the reprint equity.
But Battle Bond lands, I get, right?
The multiplayer only lands not showing
yeah,
up in
I
the
know.
Precons. Like, are you kidding me?
But like these should be printed into the ground, right?
They should.
So these,
they better be, yeah.
These and whatever the other half of the cycle needs to be,
yeah.
These should just be in every commander deck that has these colors.
Just like
the names
Tower,
like you had
just
mentioned.
Just put them in everyone. Yep.
Yep, like the names are you know, kind of like not descript enough to where it's like a specific to any one set, plane, whatever. So they could just call it Turbulent whatever, or and then that's just a good across the board. So I think this can go in every commander deck, or should go
should.
In every commander deck.
I'm sure also the designers of the precons would agree with you, but also the buck stops with, you know, finances. You know, accounting says, you know, the reprint equity of this thing has to be XYZ, and we cannot, you better put in some good reprints in the non-land cards because those are more exciting, and they're in a bit of a pickle. So hopefully, if they reprint it, if they say, like, starting for going forward, we're going to reprint it in the next one, and the next one, and the next one, they can just do it. And they have actually started doing it. They started nuking one notable land into the ground, Fabled Passage. Reprinted Fabled Passage in TMNT, and it was like a $5 card or something like that at that point.
Still
and it
crazy.
Was a notable reprint. In all five precons, they reprinted Fabled Passage in all five precons. So I guess they decided, they went to accounting and they said, pretty please, can we reprint Fabled Passage into the ground? Can we ruin the equity value of this, the reprint equity of this? And apparently they got the blessing, so maybe they could do it with Turbulence. I would love them to do that.
My hope is this is intentional. And my hope is this was a compromise to get better lands into precons. And that the accountants and the finance crew was like, you can't reprint shock lands, you can't reprint the good lands. So the design team was like, we'll just make really good lands specifically for precons and we can print them every time. So I actually have hope that these are just going to be like staple precon lands. But we will see.
That alone makes like the value of just buying these waves of precons moving forward. Like knowing that if I buy any precon, I can guarantee that I will get one of these lands.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
Yep.
So my only thing is, oh my God, if Wizards of the Coast is listening, please take Terramorphic Expanse and just delete it from your files. Why in the year 2026 in my two color decks do we still have Terramorphic Expanse? Yeah. Do you not have better duels at this point?
And
Terramorphic Expanse, zero synergies in the deck. It's just there in all five of the precons. It's like, you don't need this. You know, if you have synergies, sure. But like, just throwing it into the Prismari deck, why? Can we stop? Wizards of the Coast, can we stop, please and thank you?
And there's, I think the only deck that like actually warranted that may have been the Landfall ones, which is like the March of the Machines deck, right?
Maybe
they should not be in every one of these.
And there's even strictly better versions. At least you could do Escape Tunnel or something. They've made just like better versions.
The reprint equity. Printing.
Okay. That Escape Tunnel reprint equity.
Oh, I know the monkey paw is about to curl. They're going to replace all the terramorphic expanses of Escape Tunnel. I'm going to be like, oh, God.
We heard from the community that you really didn't like terramorphic expanse and commander precons.
In all my freaking precons. Oh, can I mention one other thing about the
turbulence? Go ahead, tell her.
I have a really big problem with the Turbulent Lands because every single time I look at them, I get really hungry, and it's a problem.
Is it because they look like cinnamon rolls?
I'm looking at Turbulent Step, and I'm like, I want to put this in my Boros deck, but every single time I look at it, I feel like I need to snack, and I'm
on a diet right now.
It looks like a raspberry Danish something, and the Turbulent Moor looks like a delicious like black sesame roll or something like that. It looks great. And I just want to eat them all. And that's the problem. I want a new artwork that's not tasty looking, please.
The Simic
I'm on
one's
a diet that this is really painful.
The Simic one doesn't look that tasty. So you can play that one. The other three.
All right.
So, yes, the new land cycle, I think we all agree they're staples. I got another card I got to throw up in the potential staple list. And that is a Road. So a Road, it's a new Path to Exile. One mana, white instant. Destroy target creature or planeswalker, its controller can search their library for a basic land, put it on the battlefield, tap, then shuffle. So literally, Path to Exile, except rather than exiling, you can hit planeswalkers. And commanders, since planeswalkers aren't super popular, I think exiling is actually a little bit better. So I think it ranks a little bit behind Path to Exile. But I'm curious what you guys think about this as a staple. Because I was looking on EDH Rec, and even though I know not all of us are the biggest Path to Exile believers, on EDH Rec, Path to Exile is like one of the most played white cards. It's number two behind Source of Plowshares
in every
47%
precon, by the way.
47% of decks. It is in precons. That is true.
That number is tremendously boosted in numbers because of that.
I really think precons is a reason for that? I see people play Path.
I'm going to say, though, that I think Path's numbers are tremendously boosted because of precons, but I do believe people will still play Path in like mono white because that's the removal number two or whatever. But I do not think that I already think Path is a big, big question mark. Why would I play a Road? I think a Road is bad. I think a Road is I would understand great. Like you can make an argument in Standard maybe, and you already know how I feel about this in Standard. If that's how I feel about like I don't feel too high on this in Standard, why in the world would I play this in Commander where like yes, I can give you a land. Now, if I'm a group hug deck, that's fun. I love giving people things, then sure. But outside of that situation, why would I want a one mana destroyer creature when I can have a better and more versatile spell? Like, wouldn't you just play Generous Gift? Like, I can hit any
mana. I personally would play Generous Gift because I'm not a big believer in Path to Exile, but I think the average commander player would play Path to Exile or Road over Generous Gift or along with Generous Gift.
I've lost many games where I get swung to lethal and I don't have three mana up, but I had one mana up, and then that's the difference, no?
I don't think that's enough of a difference, to be honest, because you have so many things that can already answer for a cheaper, efficient than a Generous Gift. But I mean, I want something I like that is versatile more than this. This is like, and Generous Gift does that. It hits anything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the first removal spell I add to my white decks. But I'm curious what you think, Tomer.
So this is removal number four.
I've been saying this for a long time. And I noticed, I saw some people actually posting like, oh, my God. It's finally catching on a little bit. This is another great ramp spell in white that happens to have double duty as removal. You're in white. You have a bunch of creatures that either have like ETBs and you don't care about them sticking around, like Lauren of the Third Path or whatever. Or you're in a token strategy, which is like one of the most common archetypes in white. You have a random 1/1 laying around. You turn it into a land. It's amazing. This one has even more potential because if you have indestructible creatures, which I don't know how many indestructible creatures you actually have. But if you do have a hypothetical commander that's like indestructible, one mana freaking rampant growth is amazing. And then worst case, you have to take out one of your opponent's creatures. You ramp them. Oh, but now my catch-up ramp is online. Boom.
Got him.
My surveyor scope. Boom.
In reality, in non-Christmas land, right? How
what Christmas land?
Are you actually firing off this stuff on your own things?
All the time. If I'm in a token strategy, obviously I'm running path. I'm going to run a road as well.
So you're playing a token strategy, right?
Yeah.
You have a bunch of tokens. And because it is a ramp spell to you, do you fire it at the first token you get just to get ahead on resources?
That depends. It's like a 1-1 for sure, yeah.
So would you say that you wait a little bit before you fire it off? Like, you want to see if there's something... Like, or do you wait till like until you play into a sweeper or something like that? Because, like, I think this card and most cards that are, you know, white ramp, more often than not, I will sit there and hold it until I'm aiming it at my opponent's thing. I find that I
never... think about it.
I have never
that's
once...
That's the solution.
You're thinking
think
too much, Grim. You're thinking
just
too
YOLO.
Much.
Just YOLO. Just
run
live
it out
my
there.
Moment.
Never once
just
in my life.
The moment
use
and
these
just
on
fire
my
off
things.
The cards in your hand, okay? If there's cards in your hands that are meant to be played, if you have the mana for a road and you have a 1-1 token laying around, just fire it. Don't think about it. You'll draw removal later on. Who cares?
No.
Then you'll draw a generous gift later. That's the point of generous gift, right? You have
you're deck thinning by ramping.
Yes, you're getting into your generous gift earlier.
I do think the indestructible synergy is actually kind of relevant because there are some popular indestructible commanders, right? Ketramos is one of them. Sure. You have the gods that are indestructible. You have Mondrak, which is an indestructible commander potentially in a token deck. So I actually think that, like...
Why would you ever fire it off on your own thing, Seth? That's the one thing I...
Because it's ramp!
I would never do it! I would
it's
never do it!
It's one mana ramping growth! That's insane!
I will say that people say that all the time, and then I almost never see it happen in practice, but I have seen it happen before. So I know that it does happen on occasion, but I feel like
he
it doesn't
won in
happen...
like 30 games!
All right, it doesn't happen as much as people like to think that it might. Although, if you were in a dedicated token deck, I could see, like, and I think it depends on why you're playing the card, right? Like,
it's
I could
mindset,
see Krim playing the card for removal and Tomer playing the card in a token deck literally as a rampant growth with the fringe upside that sometimes maybe you kill something. But if you're playing it with the mindset that I'm just going to fire this off on the first token possible and have a one mana rampant growth, that, like, that logic makes sense to me in some decks.
Yeah. You just look at it as a rampant growth for one mana at instant speed. If you look at it like that and then you're like, oh, well, I have to rampant growth my opponent. Because something needs to go away immediately. It's fine. That's good.
It's the mental framework.
Imagine if you had a rampant growth that just said, okay, and you can also cash it in to kill your opponent's creature. Like, isn't that awesome?
It's not a rampant growth then. Because then
it's
I want
a rampant
sit and
growth
wait.
That has a like channel 2 mana, give your opponent the rampant growth, destroy a creature. It's like, okay, it's like, yeah, awesome.
it's control player brain versus ramp player brain,
it's
I think.
Control player like, brain doesn't even want this. That's the thing. Like,
it's
as a ramp
player
spell,
brain, you just play the cards in your hand and don't think about the next turns.
So wait, where are we landing on this then? Like, do you think this deserves to be in the same group as the new land cycle? Like, is this actually a staple?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No, God, no.
I gotta be in tokens or in an indestructible commander, and then or else I'm not running it.
So it's
also
something
the
for
so
specific
sick,
decks.
Does it get
art
points
is,
for being
the art is amazing.
The art is very cool, yeah. The art is super good. All right, I got one more. I got one more I gotta throw out to see if you guys will let me put it in the staple tier, and then we move on to the next tier. Flashback. Flashback, as its name suggests, is
that.
1 red mana, and it lets you flashback an instant or sorcery from your graveyard. Target instant sorcery in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn. Flashback cost equal to its mana cost. So essentially like a snapcaster without the body for 1 less mana. So my thinking on this, obviously, if you're a Spellslinger deck or a Storm deck, this card's going to be insane, right? Is it better than that? Could this be in the true staple category? Is like, I don't know if I should say this, like a red Eternal Witness. Like, could you just play this and be like, almost any red deck, I'm going to flashback my Big Score. I'm going to flashback my Blasphemous Act. Like, can you just play this as a value card, assuming that your red deck is going to have enough spells that you'll get value out of this in like the mid to late game?
You want to know something funny? I have a hot take here. I think this is only bad in casual.
Oh, wait.
Okay.
Explain, Krim. Why is
because,
that?
Because, so, all right. In casual commander, Or in a higher power commander, right? Let's say I'm playing like a CDH or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's like, it's nice to have redundancy in this, right? And you can have that miser instant, like cheap spell, do all of the, give something of yours, like your win con flashback, right? Like an ad nos, whatever. That's great. But in casual, there's no one spell that I want to try to just give back, give flashback with, just because like I don't even play Snapcaster in casual, right? Like Snapcaster's not good. And I mean, it, you know, it's nice to have that, like, you know, the reduction here on flashbacks cost, but I don't play Snapcaster. So if I don't play Snapcaster in casual, why would I play flashback, right? Now, what I would play in casual, like bracket three and below, is like Mizzix Mastery, because that's big, that's flashy, it hits everything in my graveyard, because there's no one thing I'm trying to push through or one big spell or one thing I need. I just want a critical mass of spells that I could just rapid fire off. And that's where other things like, okay, Underworld Breach is a problem on its own and probably shouldn't be played in casual. So Mizzix Mastery or anything else like that can allow me to get multiple spells out of my yard and like multiple bits of value that I value higher than flashback.
Interesting.
Personally.
Yeah, that, I mean, I can see that. Tomer, I think of you as a spellslinger player sometimes. What do you think? What do you think of this one?
I mean, if I'm in spellslinger,
generically
slinger,
good. By the way, Tomer, generically, not in a storm spellslinger deck.
So I was looking at my red decks, and I have a spoiler. I have like half of my personal collection is red, and the other half is it. So I've been noticing, like, so I'm looking at like my like a Furcrag, for example. I have a lot of spells.
Would you play it?
18
in
spells. No.
No.
Wait,
is this a like Tomer super devoted to staying on theme thing? Or like even if you were me and you weren't as harsh on theme restrictions, would you still feel that way?
I kind of feel like the real use of this card is like if you're running Fierce Guardianship and SWAT and stuff like that, then it becomes super like, but you need a lot of these type of cards. You need a lot of like these super mana efficient, really ultra powerful instant sorceries that you want to be able to recur at instant speed, especially like SWAT, Deflecting SWAT and whatever the black one was, and, you know, Deadly Rollick and those type of things where you could be like, I pay one red mana at instant speed. I can Fierce at instant speed. Like that's pretty amazing. And like Krim said, that's redundancy. Like that would be at higher power, but at lower power, I don't know, flashing back counter spell, I just run another counter spell instead.
Yeah. Probably, my Seagate Restoration, you know? Tomer. You're not thinking big enough. Seagate Restoration, next turn, one mana, Seagate Restoration. Think of how many cards I will have in hand, Tomer.
I'm over Krim. I think like if you're in Spellslinger, then this is like a maybe or good. It is good, I think, in some shells, sure, for Spellslinger. And in higher power where you just want to run the best cards and you don't have like, you're not going to be running, you don't run like, okay, I'm going to run a Fierce and then I need another Fierce, so I'm going to run like counter spell. It's like, no, right, nobody has time for double blue at high, yeah, power. So the next best thing is like a flashback because it can hit my Fierce, but it can also hit my ad nause, and it can also hit all these like big spells that don't have a second best. Like the gap between the best and the second best is so high that, yeah, you can't just like fill in the slots with other things. You need to just run the best, and then flashback is versatile enough that gets all those redundant best cards. And I think Krim is correct on that one.
I do agree that I think it's going to be at its best in high power decks like CDH or like bracket, you know, four decks. I think it's going to be at its best like the higher the power gets. I still think that like it might be the red Eternal Witness. I'm going to try it in a lot of my red decks moving forward, and we'll see. Maybe it just feels too inconsistent and you're like, oh, I don't have good spells in my graveyard. I think that's a chance, but in the short term, I do plan on trying in a lot of decks because I think one mana is just like so efficient. But anyway,
mana geyser into flashback.
Oh
mana
my
geyser.
See, that's a problem. I hate mana geyser though, and that's like the best card with this. But I hate winning with mana,
wow,
geyser.
Mana geyser
feels so
I
cheap.
I built an Izzet deck for an upcoming clash for Strixhaven, and I had mana geyser, and I took it out for you. So I took it out.
Tomer,
yep.
Friends.
Yep.
Friends. That were friends. Right?
That was because I wanted to make sure my friends were having fun with me while I was playing a silly little otter guy. So keep that in mind. Aww. Don't hurt
hugs.
All right, let's
that's not a storm deck, I swear.
Are you storm? Is this Prismari, Tomer? Did you build around the new Prismari?
Oh my god. I don't have mana geyser. It's just a silly little otter. Okay, just leave
okay.
Alone.
You got it.
All right, let's move on to our next group of cards. So I think we have landed on the only thing we're all in agreement is the land cycle. The land cycle counts as true staples, and the other ones maybe they're in the next group. So let's move on to that next group, which is basically cards that are just a little worse than the true staples. These are still cards that you could play in multiple archetypes. They're not just cards that go in one archetype, but maybe they're not quite as good as the, you know, the ultra staples that go in every deck. So what's a card that you guys think falls into this second group here? Tomer, I know you got some on your list here. What do you got for me?
I have one that I think is going to be very exciting for a lot of different graveyard decks, which is like one of the most common archetypes. It is the most common archetype in black. And this one, I feel, will slot into a lot of them. Grave Researcher. Mm. It's a 3-mana black troll warlock. It's a 3/3. At the beginning of your upkeep, surveil 1. Then if there are 3 or more creature cards in your graveyard, this creature becomes prepared. Prepared is a new mechanic with Strixhaven. While it's prepared, you may cast a copy of its spell. Doing so unprepares it. So the spell that you can cast when it's prepared is Reanimate, which is straight up the sorcery Reanimate. 1 black reanimates a creature from anybody's graveyard onto the battlefield, and you lose life equal to its mana value. So first turn that it enters, it doesn't do anything for 3 mana. Then on your upkeep, you get to surveil 1, so you get a little bit of value. You fill your graveyard a little bit. And then as long as there are 3 or more creature cards in your graveyard, it becomes prepared every single turn. And for 1 additional mana every single turn, you get to reanimate, not just from your graveyard, but from anybody's graveyard. This seems like it's so easy in a graveyard deck, like a dedicated graveyard deck, to have 3 creatures in the graveyard.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of see this as like a 3-drop, you wait a turn cycle, and then every subsequent turn, not only do you get to surveil 1 with a little bit of extra value, but then you get to reanimate every single turn. That seems good to me. What do you guys say?
I think this card's nuts. Right? I think we're all in agreement here. This card is nuts. It fuels itself, right? There's a lot of... Mm. That's my concern with this set a little bit, is that a lot of these cards are single card engines.
2026 design, baby! set up and payoff, same card every time.
Yeah, put them all together.
All in one, all the way down.
All in one.
Where's our Entomb Reanimate hybrid? We need a card that entombs and reanimates all in one. We're getting
every
there.
Every turn you entomb. If you entomb, then you get to reanimate.
Then I become prepared and you get to reanimate.
Ice Still Explorer of in black, right? That's what we need. And that's I would say this is close-ish, right?
Yeah.
It's doing a lot of... Yeah, I love this card. I think this card is very good. And most importantly, I just think that Surveil 1 is huge on its own. Like, I'm so excited about that. Like, I don't even have to get to this reanimate part. Just being able to, like, know, like, that I can surveil at my upkeep every turn is already great. You're telling me I get more on top of that? Why not? Oh, that thing is reanimate? Hell yeah. So, yeah.
You know how good it feels to have, like, Search for Iskana on the battlefield and just that, like, knowing you control the top of your deck, you're filling the graveyard. This is going to give you the same vibe. I think this is, like, maybe one of the best cards in, like, casual Reanimator. I think if you're going high-powered, like, trying to win super fast in Tomb Reanimate, like, Bracket 4 CDH, then this card's probably a little too casual and slow. But if you're playing, like, mid to high-powered casual Reanimator, this card seems absolutely ridiculous to me. I do not know why you would not play it in a deck like that. And it's probably very good in, like, non-reanimator, but graveyard decks. Like, I would consider playing this in, like, a Madrolthus-style deck or some sort of just, like, graveyard-y, value-y, even if it's not a dedicated, like, I'm just a reanimator deck. So I think this actually goes into a lot of different archetypes. Like, it seems so easy to get it set up where you're just able to reanimate every turn. And like Krim said, even if you can't, you still get the Search for Iskana mode, which is still very powerful.
I do think that a lot of these prepared cards, like, we have so many that we could bring into this situation here, right? Because, like, not just this. Have you all seen, I feel like Richard will be very happy about this, Joined Researchers, have you guys seen this one?
Hey, the Secret Rendezvous one,
Got literally Secret Rendezvous. I think those are the two people in the original Secret Rendezvous.
Yeah, Olivia and Toppy.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it doesn't. The difference here is, you know, like the Grave Researcher, it doesn't enter prepared. Some of these do. This one doesn't. But at the beginning of each end step, if an opponent has more cards in hand than you, this creature becomes prepared. Each end step, it checks, by the way, if an opponent has more cards than you. Then you get a Secret Rendezvous. this actually looks really good.
I think this card looks really, really good, too. I'm actually curious. There's another one that's kind of like that, and I'm going to lump it in here because I wanted to ask you guys about this. The other one was Defacing Dusk Mage. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dog warlock. Two dog warlock.
Shibuya?
Whenever an opponent draws their second card each turn, it becomes prepared. And then you have Vandal's Edict as the spell, which is 3 minute Orzhov instant. Draw two cards. Each player loses two life. So when I first saw this, and also the Secret Rendezvous one, I was like, oh, these cards are going to be great. And then I thought about it a little bit, and my one catch is, and I want you guys to see what you thought about this, it is requiring me to spend 3 mana repeatedly. Like compared to some things that we've seen, that's like, when, like Lotho or whatever, when it's like, when your opponent does the thing, you get the treasure. When your opponent what's the one we banned on Commander class to enchantment? Trouble in Pairs. When your opponent does the thing, you draw a card.
Well, Fairy Mastermind as well.
Like, do you think that the fact that you have to pay the 3 mana is going to keep this from being as powerful as it looks at first glance? Because when I first saw this, I was like, wow, this is S tier. And then I've slowly been like going a little bit down because I'm just like, I don't know if I actually can spend my mana on this enough to get the value out of it.
It's really good.
Defacing Dusk Mage has its spell is instant speed.
It is instant, I like. Oh,
right?
That's super.
So the one
and
that is draw two, just you, but each opponent or each player loses two. Yes, you too, but everyone loses two.
Yep.
I love this card. I think that card is an ace. That card is super solid. And we've seen how easy it is to just have people draw their second card each turn. So I imagine that the Dusk Mage, our dog warlock, will usually be prepared.
Oh, yeah.
And 3 mana sounds like a lot, but when I have nothing to do, there's so many games where you've been nuked out of the game that like the cards like Secret Rendezvous and Dusk Mage just sit there and just accrue value. So much value. You've got nothing to do. These are very good in the late game. They're great in the early game. I just feel like 3 mana is a fine price to pay and to get a lot of card advantage and to like potentially rebuild at random points on cheap to cast bodies. Now, if these bodies were pricey, like if the body of the threat was like 4 or 5 mana and then you had to do all of that, that's a different story. But I can deploy these creatures at almost, you know, really no cost. And they also on their own are like 2/2s. Dog Warlock's got Death Touch. Joined Researchers got First Strike. So it's not like they're just vanilla 2/2s.
Just, what do you think?
I like them.
What do you think, Tomer? Where do you fall on these?
I'm more on the Seth camp where like, I don't think they're at the same level as like a Fairy Mastermind and stuff because the real usefulness of that is that it's a low mana investment. And then when you draw, like if for Fairy Mastermind, for example, if you draw 2 cards off Fairy Mastermind, I feel like you're already very happy with the card. And then when it goes away, you're very happy with it. And that's 2 mana draw 2. That's very good. Defacing Dusk Mage is essentially, I think it's going to get prepared all the time. That's not going to be an issue whatsoever. But realistically, like, okay, I can see myself activating, like casting its ability every single turn cycle. More than that, am I ever going to be like, okay, every single turn cycle, I'm going to spend 6 mana to draw 4 just off the Dusk Mage and not like advance my board state or anything? Like maybe I could if I'm like draw go and I have other things to do as well at instant speed. But I'm not going to be like, I don't want to be in a position where like I just play a Dusk Mage and then I just don't do anything and try to draw like 4 cards in a single turn cycle or something like that. So just like it's 5 mana to draw 2 essentially. And then each subsequent time I want to draw cards, I still have to invest 3 mana in it. That's not impossible, but it's just like, it's not going to be at the same level as Fairy Mastermind, where it's just like, okay, I pay 2 mana, and now I'm going to draw cards for the rest of its existence without having to spend any more mana. I can spend my mana on other things instead. I think this one's still good. Like, I'm going to run in Selenia because I'm a life swap deck, and lose life is actually a way to finish the game when I go to 1 and I swap life with you. And if I was like draw go, I would be more interested in this. But I feel like the 3 mana does add up a lot. It makes it a little bit less appealing. It's cool, though. And Death Touch is nice.
Death Touch is definitely huge. Huge, huge, huge on the Dog Warlock. I mean, I guess the other side of that coin, just so it's clear, I still think these cards are good. I just don't think they're as good as I thought they were at first. After I really thought them through, I was like, okay, like these are kind of like fairish. But the other side of this is like, maybe you don't have to cast the spell that many times for it to still be good.
Exactly.
Like, if you cast a Secret Rendezvous twice, you probably got enough value out of your 2-drop. Or even if you Defacing Dust Mage twice, that's probably still where, even if you did it once, you ended up essentially having a weird Muldrifter where it was like five mana, draw two, and you get this Death Touch body out of it. Like, so maybe you don't have to cast them, you know, five, six, seven times for them to be worth the card.
That's it right there. I am happy to just cast this once, right? And then from that point on, it just sits there and it'll just accrue value. I feel like it, like a planeswalker that, but like that can't be attacked. The fact that I can sit there and have something have give me an action every turn, I'll take it. On some
this
of the,
like,
you know, in some of the games where I'm stuck with nothing, I would rather have something that sits there, not enough of a threat where like people are like, I gotta kill that person, just enough to where it's a respectable little guy that can be left alone.
This is the type of card I really want to see if I'm holding a board wipe in my hand. You know, it's like, I don't want to advance my board state because I know I'm going to wipe the board. So I'm going to play a Defacing Dusk Mage. People don't want to trade down to it because of that touch. And then I'm going to try and activate its ability for like one, two, maybe three turns. And then I'm going to board wipe and then I'm going to deploy. Like, I think that's like the best case scenario for this card. So I don't know. Maybe in like more control-y decks too would be good.
So next on our not quite staple, but kind of staple list. We got a card that you brought up, Krim, that I'm actually very excited for in Vicious Rivalry. What is Vicious Rivalry about?
All right, so this is two black and a green sorcery. And then as an additional cost to cast the spell, pay X life. Destroy all artifacts and creatures with mana value X or less. This seems great, right? Like, I mean, it's, first off, two very beautiful lines of text makes it so I don't have to sink more mana into this. I could just pay whatever life. I get to also blow up artifacts as well as the creatures. I think adding in the artifacts is everything here, and that's how this feels like a Golgari sweeper. Like, I really like this. If I can play Golgari, I feel like this is going to be just... I mean, Toxic Deluge 1, this too? I don't know how many of these pay life effects you can have, but I will say that this is a very efficient sweeper.
It's Toxic Deluge with one more mana to get all the artifacts. That's insane to me. You're paying one green mana on top of a Toxic Deluge to be able to get rid of the artifacts. I guess you lose the, like, I can kill indestructible things, which is another kind of ramp with Path to Exile thing, which I hear people bring up a lot, but then it doesn't actually come up that often, I don't think, in practice, that you're, like, nuking a bunch of indestructible things. But still, it is an upside to the card. But I think this is, like, very close to an auto include if you're in Golgari. I think this might actually be the best wrath in the colors behind Toxic Deluge. So I think this is actually just like kind of a staple level card for me. Obviously, you got to be Golgari or Golgari Plus to be able to run it. But Tomer, where are you at on this one? This one's got to be good, right?
It's four mana, right? It's four mana. And then you pay
Two, four mana and then X life to destroy all artifacts and creatures, mana value X or less,
I'm very bitter. I'm very bitter that it's not Orzhov because I want this in Selenia so bad.
Oh, yeah, it'd be very good in Selenia.
But I get it. It's like a life gain, life loss style for Witherbloom and stuff. I think, like, though my favorite Golgari board wipe to this day is still going to be, oh my god, I'm blanking. It's four mana. Calling the Weak? No,
Calling Ritual.
Calling Ritual.
That's only mana value two or less, though, right? Is that
But then it gives you, it's a big ramp spell
you
on top of
it. You get a bunch of mana.
And that clears treasures and stuff. This one is definitely more flexible. And also, I think it's probably going to be more easier to put in your Golgari decks than Orzhov, just because if you're in green, typically you're not running mana rocks, right? Like you're doing land ramp stuff. So you don't have to worry about, you know, losing mana rocks to this ever. And you could slot it into more decks. Whereas if your opponents are not in green, typically they do have either treasures or mana rocks typically to ramp, and that just hits them. So it feels even more one-sided. So yeah, I think this one's very, very good. A four mana, that's like really, really nice. If you can play it like turn four, turn five, turn six even, you can really swing ahead of the table, especially if you get like a bunch of creatures and their mana rocks at the same time.
Oh, yeah. And it's nice to pop all those treasures.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting rid of those is huge.
Rid of those clues,
especially these days. There's so many. Yeah. Oh, this is the nightmare for Phil. And also me sometimes, I guess. all right, let's move on to another one. I got to ask you guys about this card because I have not seen hype for this card. But this is one that every time I read it, I'm like, I think this card might actually be really good. And it's just a lowly uncommon in Practice Scrollsmith. So Practice Scrollsmith. It's a three mana. It's a red, a Boros hybrid, and a white for a 3/2 first striking dwarf cleric. It says, when it enters, exile target non-creature, non-land card from your graveyard. Until the end of your next turn, you may cast that card. So this plays off the lore hold theme of, like, I want stuff leaving the graveyard. But that's a very niche archetype. That's not enough to make it on our list today. But I know I tried this pitch earlier. Is this the Boros Eternal Witness? I'm imagining you're playing, like, a Boros Equipment deck or a Boros Auras deck or something like that. Something that has non-creature permanence and an artifact deck. Is this not pretty good that you just, it's three mana like Eternal Witness? Yeah, it's more like Impulse Draw Eternal Witness where you have to play it with a timing restriction of your next turn. But still, it's three mana, and then the next turn you replay your Cauldra piece that got milled by Crim, or you play, you know, like, doesn't it seem like it might actually be kind of good? I feel like there's quite a few Boros decks. They have a lot of non-creature, non-land cards in them, and I feel like in that context, this is actually just, like, a pretty decent card that you could play in a lot of decks. But what do you guys think of Scrollsmith?
I think the timing restriction of, example, Ewit, having the luxury and the flexibility to play whenever is way better.
Yeah. Yeah, I right. mean, with counters or something, you can get a counter and hold your mana drain for
blue
a future
players,
turn or something.
Sure.
Like, that's, yeah.
But, like,
no, but it's until the end of your next
you
turn, though. That's a good one. Whenever I like that they moved away from, red used to be like, until the end of your turn.
Oh, so
like,
bad.
Until the next end step, you can do the thing. And it's like, well, if I spent three mana, then I probably don't have the mana to cast the thing. Mm-hmm. If I spend three
just
mana up front.
Just sucks.
Yeah, just because we're awful garbage. Yeah. But, I mean, that one gives you all the mana to cast those spells.
Yeah.
A little bit different. But you know what I mean. So this one, where it's like until your next end step. So you have a full turn cycle to untap. You have all your mana. I think it's good. And a 3-2 first striker is nice. Like you said, you can hold your equipment and stuff. It misses lands and creatures. But like if you're an artifacts or enchantress, then yeah. It's
okay. Mana. Outside of which, by the way, the very cool design space they've gone with Laura Hold here, in a average Boros deck, Boros plus deck, would I want to play this over, like, how many of these effects can you have, though? Because you had Continue. Right, with Turtles, you have Brought Back, you have all these things that could just give you the thing back. I know
if they have to be on the battlefield, like, the turn, they have to leave, to the graveyard first, right, that turn.
The main thing is how many of these recursion and like you know, kind of engines and cards can you have in the deck until it's almost like kind of pointless?
I think you have to be a graveyard deck. Like, well, this is a lore hold. It's for lore hold, and it doesn't make sense.
Sure.
Like, you're milling yourself, you're discarding. So then in the context of that, it's fine. But would I throw it into like a random Boros deck? No.
But like, would you replace any of the things that like reoccur stuff that leave the battlefield, like with this?
Very different job, I would say. I view Continue as like a very different. I mean, I think that Continue is something I would only play in like a very specific like combo deck or something where I'm like synergized with it. Like, I don't think I would just jam that into a normal deck. So I think that like, I think they just serve different purposes. I see Continue as like a combo enabler, and I see this as more of like a value piece, like Eternal Witness. So I could see playing them both in the same deck, but I think they mostly serve different purposes, I would say.
When I'm deck building, I would look at those as the same thing.
They don't
functionally work the same, but they would serve the same role and purpose of like what I'd want them there for, right? I'd lump them all as my recursion cards and things like that. So
I think you also like, you do not tap all your mana every single turn, which is what scares me the most of you, Crim. That's why I feel like Brought Back is so good for you, but like most, I don't know, I feel like the average casual player is just like tap out, pass, and then just zones out until their next turn, to be honest.
That's what I want to do. Yeah.
Like Continue, you'll be like, wait, you wiped my board? Oh, dang, I had a card for that. Oh.
I mean, do you want to think when you play Commander? The answer is no. Play Scrollsmith. If not, play Continue. Yeah.
Dang.
Regardless of whether or not you need to turn your brain on or off at certain points, the thing is, I think that you start adding too many of these into your deck, and your deck starts to lose things.
I mean,
right? Like,
I agree with you.
Occupy that.
You run into that with green with Eternal Witnesses. Like, you can't play all the different regrowth Eternal Witness effects because there's just too many of them. And you really want, like, two or three or, like, whatever the number is for what your archetype is. But I think it is a type of card that has diminishing returns. So I would agree with that, like, philosophically at least.
Yeah.
That's the only, by the way, to say it all, I don't think this card's bad. I just think that you can only run so many of, that version stuff.
That makes sense. All right, what else do we have in this not quite staple tier or archetype staple
my
tier?
My turn.
What do you got for us?
I have a thing and I wanted to talk about it. It's Resonating Lute. It's my favorite card from the entire set. And you know me, I might be a little bit of an Izzet fanboy over here. And this actually might be one of the most busted things they've ever printed for Izzet Spellslinger, which is the most popular, the best archetype in the entire format.
Yep.
Resonating Lute, 4 mana. 2 blue and a red artifact. Lanes you control have tap, add 2 mana of any one color, spend this mana only to cast instant sorcery spells, and it has extra like a fluff on top. Tap, draw a card, activate only if you have 7 or more cards in your hand. So it's kind of like a Library of Alexandria better.
Doubling but
like,
your mana wasn't that, enough.
Just ignore that part. Who cares?
How
the
you
fact
have 7
that it's
cards
4 mana.
If you're spending all your spells.
True. If you're spending all the spells so quickly, you're crying. You're like, oh no, I've cast all my spells so much faster. Double my rates. I need more cards. And then the loot's like, I got you, buddy. So this card's insane. I think if you're an Izzet Spellslinger, if you're in Spellslinger, you run this. This is a mana reflection or whatever for 4 mana. Is this insane? And it sometimes draws you cards on top of that. Like, what? It's so dumb. I love it.
This card
the exact
is
deck
so
that this is for is absolutely busted.
I mean, like I have an Ashling deck, and literally you go Ashling, turn 2,
play
turn
that.
3, you flip her, and then you play Resonating Lute, turn 4, you just have double mana to cast sorceries.
I mean, it is only for instance and sorcery, so you can't be super creature heavy, but yeah, like it's insane, right?
But like, okay, would you play this outside of a Spellslinger deck?
No.
I think this is an archetype staple. I think this is like one of the first cards you add to your Spellslinger deck, but
100.
I don't think you play it in many other archetypes. Maybe there's certain like very spell heavy control decks that could make it work that aren't like actual spell. Like maybe there's like a few other archetypes, but I think it's basically like just one of the best cards in a Spellslinger deck. I also like that it's really good in 5 color Spellslinger because it's another like you make mana of any color cards. You can kind of do the Chromatic Lantern turn off your brain a little bit thing when it comes to tapping. So I think that's another upside.
Yeah, I think this card's insane. This card's absolutely
insane.
Nuts in Spellslinger.
I can't believe they printed this. I did not need this, but I'll take it.
All right. Let's go on to another one. And I gotta bring up this card because I'm very curious. Or wait, is it your turn, Krim? I think is it your turn or my turn? Do you have a card?
I think it is. I don't know. Is it my turn?
Right.
We'll pretend.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I have another. I feel like I've only picked removal spells.
Of course you only picked removal spells, Krim.
On brand.
Moment of Reckoning. 3 white, black. Choose up to 4. You may choose the same mode more than once. The 2 modes are destroy target non-land permanent, return target non-land permanent card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Is this
unplayable,
spell not
doesn't
sick
blow,
in Orzhov?
Doesn't blow up lands.
Okay, all right. Sorry that it doesn't
unplayable
hit lands,
unplayable.
Tilbert. Unplayable.
Okay. Imagine spending 7 mana and you can't even blow up a land. Garbage. Throw it in the trash.
I can't believe you would say this to Cityscape Leveler.
This card's
which,
sweet.
By the way, has the name Cityscape.
How much mana do
lands
I have to spend to blow up a land, Wizards of the Coast? Like, come on.
This card's very cool, though. I love the flexibility of it. Just like, the fact that you can reanimate 4 things, or you could blow up 4 things, or probably most commonly, like, inexpropriate almost, you're going to, like, reanimate your best thing and blow up 3 things or some combination of them. It is a lot of mana, so you need to be an Orzhov deck that can realistically be casting 7 mana sorceries. But, like, if you're a deck that can do that, I think this card is very powerful.
People are out here casting Ruinous Ultimatums fairly, things
yes,
like
that.
That.
Is true.
So
that is true.
In a casual game of Commander, I think that this card will be huge, right? Because if you're an Orzhov or Orzhov, maybe 3 colors with Orzhov, I wouldn't go beyond 3 colors because it is black, white, right? So,
wait, can I reanimate opponent's creatures with this?
No, only from your graveyard, but it's non-land permanent.
And it's not just creatures.
So you could get an artifact or an enchantment or a vehicle or something if you wanted to.
It's flexible.
This is a very flexible spell, which is why I bring this up as I don't think it belongs in any one archetype. I think this is just, if you play black and white, it's just good to have.
I think, so when we've seen, what is the card, Windgrace's Judgment? Is that the one that blows, like a Golgari one that's 5 mana and it blows up something from each opponent, I think?
Like
something like that.
Casualties of War type thing.
Yeah, Casualty of Wars. One of the problems with cards like that, even though they're very powerful, is they don't really immediately put anything on your battlefield. So sometimes you blow up your opponent's best stuff and they're like a little bit angry at you. And they're like, you know what? I'm going to attack you because you just blew up my thing. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of fair. And then you end up dying. I like that this can put your biggest thing into play so you have some defense on top of riling up the rest of the table by blowing up their best thing. So I think that's what makes this card a little bit more exciting to me than some of the other similar removal-only versions of this effect we've seen.
It may not be flashy, but I think it'll play nicely just because, yeah, like you said, right? I can pick off maybe the one problematic permanent that I actually care about and then reanimate three really good things that I care about. So... I think this is just a solid, versatile spell for Orzhov.
You can also just dumpster one person. It doesn't make you split it up between opponents. So you could just get
you
four
just
of one person's things.
One player's best thing.
It's a one-sided kind of wrath almost for somebody. That's funny. I dig it.
All right, let's move on to another card. I got to ask you guys about this card because I haven't made up my mind how good it is, but I feel like if it's going to be good, it's going to be good in the kind of decks that I play. And that's Fractal Anomaly. So Fractal Anomaly is a one mana instant. It's a blue card. And it says create a 0/0 green and blue fractal creature token and then put X +1/+1 counters on it, where X is the number of cards you've drawn this turn. So if you're drawing lots of cards, this card just adds a huge amount of power to the battlefield for a single mana. You brainstorm, you get a 3/3, you cast a Seagate Restoration, you get a 10/10. It is just a big vanilla creature. I've seen people kind of hype for this card. Is this card any good? Like, if you're playing a card draw heavy Spellslinger deck, Tomer, or like whatever Seth deck, do you play this card because it makes a really big body? Or is this one of those cards where you're like, it's Commander, like, I want to Enter's Trigger, I don't care about just a big body?
I mean, it does the floor of this is you make a 1/1 on your turn, like,
maybe.
I don't know, man. Does it fly? The floor is very low, at the very least. No, it doesn't fly. What the hell?
But if I math Magic's Tomer and then cast this, I'm gonna think of how big that fractal's gonna be.
I'm surprised Seth is even considering this card. I thought he would just run another card draw spell on top of his card draw. Right?
You've convinced me, Tomer. I gotta kill people somehow. So I figure all card draw one of these,
the
and I gotta cover it now. Yeah,
this is the one.
See, I'm a responsible Commander player now. I have a win con. I'm learning.
Not
guys.
A win con. It doesn't even have a nation. What's going on?
Okay, I tried to play a win con. I played something that wasn't card draw. Let's go with
why
that.
Why doesn't it at least fly? Like, come on. Okay.
Oh, all right. Maybe that one's not good enough. But Tomer, I think you got a card that might be. What else do you got that fits into this group?
Other than the loot? Oh boy. Oh, I have something.
Again, not to be confused with creature loot.
Okay. I have one. I feel like this is actually going to be very slept on because this card kind of seems insane to me. And I really want to try it out, but I want to hear your thoughts on it. Changing Loyalty, 2 mana, black enchantment aura. It has flash and replicate 2, which means when you cast a spell, you can copy it for each time you paid its replicate cost of 2 mana. And you choose new targets for the copies. The copies become tokens. Enchant creature. When enchanted creature dies, return it to the battlefield under your control. So when you want to cast this, because it has flash, you want to wait until a creature is going to the graveyard. Like somebody wiped the board or somebody is casting a removal spell, whatever. A creature is going to die. And then you fire off Changing Loyalty for 2 mana. And that creature is going to die and then come back on your side of the battlefield. So you can use this to protect your creatures. Like if they're about to die, you can get them right back onto the battlefield. That's good. But more exciting, you can steal your opponent's creatures that are about to die. And because it has replicate, if you have a lot of mana held up and somebody like wipes the board or something like that, you could just be like, oh, I'm going to replicate this like 2-3 times and steal a whole bunch of creatures at the same time. So that's what I really like about this. It's like, it's protection for your creatures in a way, but also it's weird theft in a way. And it really punishes like a removal or board wipes or anything. And you can even run like an Aristocrats too, I guess. You could put it like on your own things and then double the enter triggers and stuff like that. So I don't know. I feel like this card is kind of crazy. I want to play it real bad.
I will admit, I kind of overlooked the fact you could steal your opponent's creatures until you just said that. I was thinking this was like 2 mana, save your own creature. And I was like, this card sucks. Like, you got to rep 4 mana to save 2 creatures. But the fact that you can hit your opponent's creatures and steal them, that actually has me way more excited about the card. it actually seems like it could be really good in mono black, right? You have coffers that can make mana. Can't you just like coffers and make like 20 mana and like cast this a bunch of times in Toxic Deluge and just like steal all the good stuff on the battlefield? Is that, am I understanding this card right? Is that what that really does? Is that not insane?
Yeah.
Is that is not insane?
Good? I think this card's great. It seems really fun. And the fact that you can go ahead and just replicate that so many times over, I'm sold. I like that.
It's like obviously better in like an aura as an enchantress, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like the baseline is pretty good. He's just like, something's about to die. I'm going to yoink it.
I mean, even, just 2 mana steal the thing. Like, that's very efficient for stealing the one of the best things on the battlefield, the best thing on the battlefield. Yeah, I actually kind of really like this card. Interesting. Huh. All right. Do we have any more cards that we need to mention before we wrap things up today? Is there anything else? I see Tomer. You got something.
No,
I see
you
shaking your head.
I already mentioned, so somebody else can go.
Oh, do you have any more, Grim?
Okay, this one's more for me, and I love my edicts.
Is it another removal spell? It is a removal spell.
Yeah, okay, but no. But wait. It comes with a creature. It comes with a creature.
Oh, well, okay. That's better then. Yes. Okay, carry on.
Merchant of Venom.
Mm-hmm.
That is a card that I'm a big fan of. And it's from the, I believe, one of the pre-cons, right?
I think it's Witherbloom.
It's the Witherbloom one? Yeah, okay. Mm. So Merchant of Venom, though, is 3 and a black menace. When this creature enters, each player, everyone, sacks a creature of their choice. Whenever a player sacrifices a permanent, put a 1/1 counter on this creature. You're playing now. You've got this. You've got Super Shredder. You've got things that are just checking whenever anybody sacrifices permanents. These are all going to grow very big. And Merchant of Venom himself is nice because he also kind of fuels it himself, like most things are. The one thing that is nice is it comes in and it just makes everybody edict right out the gates. And it's got menace on top of that. So when it comes down, as long as you have another creature, this immediately gets +4. Because each player will have sacrificed something. So that's a 4 mana 5/5 with menace that'll just continue to grow and is attached to an edict. And I love edicts. And especially you're telling me now I got an edict that can actually hit people. I like it.
This card's
this one's insane.
Big. Yeah, this card's going to get really big, really fast.
I think like if I'm in a sacrifice deck, I just run this. Like I feel like it's better than Fleshbag Marauder in a lot of situations because yes, you can't sacrifice it to itself. I mean, you could if you really wanted to, and then it's just like a 1 mana more Fleshbag Marauder. But the real sauce is if you sacrifice anything else, and then it becomes a 5/5 of menace if everybody else sacrificed a creature too, and then just sits there. And when you're cracking your fetch lands, when you're cracking treasures, when you're sacrificing your own things, because you're a sacrifice deck probably, it just becomes like a 10/10 with menace and stuff, and your opponents have to like double block and lose 2 creatures, or else they take like near lethal to the face after a couple turns. Like that's very exciting.
I'm curious, Grim. Would you play this outside of a sac deck? Like, how many non-Merchant of Venom ways do you have to be sacrificing things to be interested in this? Or will you just play it as, like, a removal spell, even if you're not really a sac deck?
If I'm a deck that has creatures, I will play it.
Okay.
Just because I like the big body. If I'm in black, I already love my edicts, so you already know by default,
you're gonna
I load every deck.
Sack.
Yeah, like, Soul Shatter is already in every one of my decks. Shealdred's Edict is already in all my decks. So this will just give me another reward, right? And then now I'm just getting, funny enough, as Magic has been moving forward, it's just rewarded with me with so many cool cards that, you know, just rewarded me for my love for edicts, right? Super Shredder grows, this grows. Everything just keeps growing. And
could this not
I
be
like
Universes
that.
Beyond card too? Like Merchant of Venom, so he's like giving Venom the character from Marvel stuff.
Funny enough, he also goes in my Venom deck as well. But I also like him just as an edict guy that just grows. These cards that are checking whenever a player sacks a permanent is huge in Commander.
Yeah.
Now the card seems very, very, very strong. I also want to shout out this one. I think is interesting. It's kind of funny because I'm not the biggest basic land believer. And this card has me thinking about maybe adding some more basics to my, like, 4 and 5 color decks, which it scares me because normally that's not how I build my decks. But Planar Engineering, it's 4 mana. It's a sorcery. It says, sack 2 lands. Search your library for 4 basic lands. Put them in the battlefield tapped and then shuffle. So when I see this card, I don't think I would play this in most decks, right? Like, if you are just going to just be ramping in like a mono green deck or something. It doesn't have that much value. I think there's a few cases where this card is going to be absolutely insane. One is in 4 and 5 color decks. This is one card that basically just gets you all your colors of mana, right? You get basics of 4 of the 5 types. Your mana is going to be good for the rest of the game. So I really like that. It seems very good in decks that care about getting lands into the graveyard. If you're doing Lord Windgrace shenanigans or reanimating lands. The other place this card seems wild to me is in landfall-based decks, where this is one ramp spell that's putting 4 lands into play at once, which is so many Scoot Swarms or Tifas or whatever, Rampaging Baylaws, whatever your silly landfall payoff is. Like, it's going to be so good there. What do you guys think of this card? I feel like landfall is a popular enough archetype that this might actually deserve a spot in our list of staples, but what do you guys think?
I slotted over here because I was thinking, like, this. As much as I have disdain for land strategies personally, I have to begrudgingly say this is goated, right? Like, if you're like Hearthhold was one of the most popular precons and commanders that came out last year, and it's all about like landfall and sacrificing lands, and this is like a staple. Titania, it's a staple. The Gitrogmaster, it's a staple. Anything that wants landfall triggers, it's 4 landfall triggers for 3 mana on a single card. Staple. Like, and then when you have the every single landfall deck is also a graveyard deck, by the way, because obviously you want lands in the graveyard because then your Ice Steel Explorers can get it back. And then, oh, by the way, I'm going to do Spend Reclamation. So all those things are all the same thing, basically. And they all want this. This is going to be seeing so much play in land decks. So much. Insane.
Yeah. I mean, that's just super. The landfall decks will eat real nice with this deck or this card.
Yeah.
This card's super solid.
It's also run basics.
You do. Yeah. That is the one downside. I need 4 basic lands and my guess 5 because I might draw one naturally. So,
I have to put 5 basics
in my deck, but I think I might be able to handle that. The only other thing I'd mention about this card is it's one of the rare ramp spells that is sort of free if you have like a Splunking effect because it's 4 mana to get 4 lands, and if they come into play untapped, you can make the 4 mana right back again. So if you're a Splunking or like Amulet believer, it gets even better there. All right, any more cards on the way out the door? This is your last chance to shout out something, anything you want from Secrets of Strixhaven. I see Tomer, I see the finger up. What do you got?
Omnis Harvest, 3 mana black sorcery Gravestorm. Target player draws a card and loses 1 life. This card is absolutely bananas in like sacrifice decks, but also if you're just like a treasure deck. You know, this one, it's whenever you copy it for each permanent put into a graveyard from the battlefield this turn. So that counts your fetch lands that you're cracking. It's counting also like if you're sacrificing creatures or Eldrazi Scions or whatever. But then if you also have treasures on top of that, oh, baby, you sacrifice a bunch of treasures and then you cast this and whatever. You draw like 5 cards for 3 mana. That seems super fun. I like it a lot.
That seems very good in sacrifice decks The way it is worded, it does work with tokens because it doesn't say cards anywhere on there. So it does actually work with tokens. Yeah, a card actually seems like a good source of card advantage. Can you play this? Like, we play 3-mana draw 3s. Like, is it realistic to play this in, like, non-sacrifice decks? Like, can you just get enough card draw out of cracking fetches and, like, doing stuff like that to build, like, a draw 3 for 3 out of this? Or is that a little much?
Nah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I figured you probably got to be kind of aggro with stuff going in the graveyard. If it was an instant, I think you could, because then you could play off your opponent's stuff. But at sorcery speed, your opponent's stuff's probably not going to be going in the graveyard unless you're like wrathing the board or something. But
oh my god, if you cast it over a board wipe,
you might just die though. You do lose a lot, but still, yeah. I mean, it's a good way to go. What about you, Krim? Anything else you want to shout out before you wrap it up for the day?
I think outside of that, no. I mean, like, I got my Edict guy. I've talked about all the sweet removal here. I mean, I really think the prepared cards are really good. But outside of that, I guess there is one last thing, which I guess is Arc of Hunger.
The Boros one, right?
Well, that one's so fun.
It's a 2-mana... Yeah. Red-white artifact. Whenever one or more cards leave your graveyard, this artifact deals 1 damage to each opponent. You gain a life. Mill a card. You may play that card this turn. This is such a cool design space for what Lorehold and Boros is. I've actually really grown to love what Boros is doing. And as they continue to add more cards like this, It's just a neat way to just make Boros break out of just Hammer Time, right? Hammer Time and whatever else. So this is just a sweet design. I cannot wait to play this. I'm actually building the Lorehold Historian, you know, as the commander, right? The Planeswalker one. Just because I think it's a really sweet design. So, I don't know. I just thought they really nailed it out of the park with just everything red-white here. So, I'm a Lorehold guy.
I think that's one of the best parts of going to Strixhaven. It's like, my favorite part of this entire plane is just, like, Boros is really cool there. I think Golgari is kind of cool there with Witherbloom, with, like, the life loss, life drain stuff they have going on. So you get to see colors doing things that they don't do on most other planes because of the super spell-heavy focus. And I think this is one of those cards that's super neat. And the only downside of this card is it's probably not very staple-y yet because there's just, like, I don't know what decks you put this in outside of, like, Quintorius or Lorehold or something. Like, are there other decks outside of, like, Strixhaven Commanders that you think this would be especially good at?
Honestly, Boros Mill is, like, is definitely self-mill is, like, a thing that I like to play. It's got, you know, it uses the Ozgear.
Oh, Ozgear,
yes. It might go in Ozgear, actually. Yeah. It's just an artifact, so you can copy it.
Right, and it fills a graveyard for Ozgear. Okay, yeah.
That's the only other place I'd go with, but I'm pretty much going to change my Boros Mill deck to probably lean into more of the Lorehold stuff. Mm-hmm. Just because, yeah, I can only have so many Boros decks.
Anyway, everyone. I think those are our top cards from Secrets of Strixhaven. So you've seen our rankings of the best cards, the staples, the near staples, the archetype staples. Let us know what you think. How good are these cards? What do you think will be the most played cards from the set? What card are you most excited to play? Let us know in the comments, and we'll be back next week to talk some more Commander. So until then, have an amazing week, and this is the crew signing out.